copies of the agenda and the relevant documents. We are from I don't think it's called holiday. We are from our constituency work. We are the public representatives. We are forever on the ground and doing our work. We are from a number of activities. We are from a very challenging 10 days of the passing of Mama Winnie, where we have learned a number of things, we had to draw lessons, and I do think as the nation, we will then be focusing on all the her activism, her caring of the communities. I'm sure that it has we are to really draw lessons and say to ourselves, in the work that we are doing, we are then going to try our level best, that we commit, we humble ourselves. So, and that slogan that said, you hit a woman, you hit a rock, I think in the 10 days has been more relevant. My voice may be a bit hoarse, I think I'm running up the flu, but I will try my level best, so that we don't waste much time, because we have got our day is quite hectic. And welcome, Honorable Adams, because you were not here when we closed. It was said you were off sick, but we're happy to see you back. We will do the normal for the benefit of those that may not be knowing one another. I'm Dundra, I'm the chairperson, Lindelo is my name, I'm the chairperson of the Buffalo Committee on Health. Next to me is Machalamba, Miss Machalamba, who is the secretary to the committee, Vlogazi is her name, at the extreme back on my left is Moses, who's part of the research. Zubair, who's also part of the research team. Next to him is Lindokuhle, who is our content advisor. I will introduce others as they come. Members will introduce themselves using the mic, and then the AG's office will do likewise. Honorable members, over to you.
Madam, now to my son, how am I said, Kilulukula, the hotel in the parliament in Latavopi, Kalu.
Good morning, Jumelang. My name is Patricia Kopani. I'm a member of this portfolio committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Vishma Shalela.
Good morning. My name is Mashubazi Mashafta, a member of the committee.
Morning. I'm Mapanga W.B. Donald, a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Rachel Ellen, member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Mbulelo Nkonzo, member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Lindy Wolfson, I'm a member of this portfolio committee.
Over to you. Morning, my name is Tabrum Sisinyane from the HSA.
Good morning, my name is Sithembile Ngubane from AGSA.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. My name is Andre Segeto from the Office of the AGSA.
My name is...
You use the mic and you give us your full name.
Morning, my name is Ruth Boyani. I'm from PMG.
Good morning, my name is Tamar Khan from Business Day.
Oh, thank you very much. There's only one thing that is missing, is my pair of glasses. But rest assured, I can see you. Listen, I can see you. I don't know whether there can be anybody who can be kind enough and loan me his or her, if that is allowed. That was only like a note, Honorable Members. We will hand over to you. Oh, sorry, we've got a couple of apologies. Honorable Ndaba, who is not feeling well. Honorable James will join us later. Dr. Thembe Kwayo is attending Science and Technology. Mr. Imam Sheikh is unable to... He is out of the city, Cape Town. And, yeah, for now, those are the apologies that we are having. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Chair, before the presentation, as members of Parliament, we need to receive the documents on time so that we prepare ourselves, so that we can engage effectively. It's really unfair that we arrive here, we just got the documents before us. I checked with our committee secretary. It's not her fault, but it's the AG who just submitted the document this morning. In future, really, we need to have the documents on time.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Member. I think they are here. They will respond to that, but I think it will be important for me to apologize to members for that inconvenience. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, first and foremost, let me take the opportunity to thank the committee for allowing us the opportunity to come and present on our key topic. But before we get started on that, I'd also like to formally apologize to the members with regard to the late submission. We did unfortunately have to go through certain processes, including briefing the chairperson one-on-one before we get to the actual committee, and that has resulted in us unfortunately not being able to submit on time. So we do apologize profusely for that, and that's something that we will make sure that we deal with in future. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I think before I start presentation, I want to highlight the fact that there is two sets of documents that you've received. The one document is called Briefing to the Health Portfolio Committee on Health Portfolio Review of the APP, and there's a document called Annexures. So the document on Annexures, we realize that the one document is a lot, and a lot of it is information that we actually highlight every year when you come to the committee. So that is the document for more information. However, throughout the presentation of the main document, we will be referring to the annexures. So for today, we won't be going through the annexures. That's for members to actually go through for their information. However, if they have questions on it, we can also deal with it. So when you look at the main document called Briefing to the Health Portfolio Committee that is on the screen, that's the document that I'll be going through right now. So our first slide is the reputation promise, where we just say as an organization, we have a constitutional mandate, and as a supreme audit institution of South Africa, we exist to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. So this is the reputation promise as an organization that we have. And in every presentation that we have, we always remind the members of our reputation promise as an organization. When we move to the next slide talks to is the purpose and the index document, where we're saying the purpose of this document is to provide portfolio committee with audit insights on the interim review of the Department of East Entities draft APP in order to aid value to oversight. So on the index, our presentation is divided into the first session is the theme to improve audit outcomes. Then we move to the APP review. We also have a section on key matters for noting, status of records review, key recommendations for improvements, and the annexures that I just referred to. When we move into the theme to improve audit outcomes, in the prior year when the Auditor General was tabling the general report, he then introduced a theme, an accountability theme, which is the theme that as an organization we are focusing on, and in all our engagements we always remind the management, the committee, and everyone involved in the public to say for the current year our theme is accountability. So in this accountability, we have the model that says that accountability is for us to plan, do, check, and act. So when you look at plan, we're saying as the department, they every year they within their APPs they define the targets that they want to meet, and then they plan to achieve the target. So for them to achieve the target, they need to then implement the basics, which is internal control and supervision. So that is the due part of the accountability model. And while doing it, also the necessity that they must also check, there must be reviews of what they are doing in order to get to the target that they have defined. So that is the global thing that is monitoring by the assurance providers. And assurance providers can be senior management, the accounting officer, executive, as well as the internal and external auditors. Then there is also part which says the act, which is the consequence management. And because we're saying you can plan and do and check, but if there's no consequence management for any transgression, we will not be able to achieve the targets that we have set ourselves to achieve. And we're saying in this accountability model, if these processes are in place and consequence management is in place, the effect will be that we'll have the better audit results, audit outcomes, and then ultimately then there is a better life for citizens. The next slide, I'm just going to read. It's also one of what he quoted while he's tabling. He says leadership is a key driver of good internal controls, which are key to ensuring the auditees deliver on their priorities in an effective, efficient, and economical manner. Good internal controls, which is the responsibility of leadership, will also ensure the quality financial statements and performance reports are produced and applicable legislation is complied with, especially around procurement contract management. So this also falls into the accountability model, as this is the role of the leadership in the public sector. So the next section we are moving on is on the review of the APPs. So in the current year, we looked at the number of APPs, which we'll look at, we'll get to in the next slide. But the scope of our review is that it provides an early warning with where concerns with regards to measurability and relevance of the indicators and targets have been identified. The interim review does not entail detailed audit work that needs to be done because we are doing an interim review on the 18-19 APP. So we don't do detailed procedures of the underlying systems, but we just do high-level procedures. And then this interim review is also performed on a selection of significant programs. So we do not perform the review on the whole set of the APP. So the scope or the review procedures that we have is that we assess the process followed by the department and its entities to prepare and submit the strategic plans and APPs. We assess the measurability and the relevance of the final draft indicators and targets for the selected program. So the findings that we get from this review is only communicated in the interim management report because it's a review of the APP that for the coming year. So those findings do not have any impact on the current year's audit outcome. There is also, if you look at Annexure A of our set of annexures, there is more details on what we follow. We also define the measurability and the relevance in that. So for the committee members, if they need to look at for more details, they can go to the Annexure A of the slide. So I think we'd want to note as well from the review that we did, all the findings that we raised have been the effect of the changes on the final draft. However, we want to also indicate on this slide that we reviewed all entities except CCOD and MRC,
and with CCODs, because they're still a year behind, they're still catching up with their old work. And with MRC, the reason behind it was they've been clean for a number of years, so we did not see a risk in that term so that we can review. But with CMS, the department, NHLS and office, we did receive their APPs, and then there were a number of findings that were raised. However, I would also want to note the fact that before the APP was finalized, those findings were effected. If the committee would want to see the findings that we've raised, I think if we go to Annex D, we just highlighted the summary of the number of findings that we raised for the specific indicators and targets. The following slide we included just for information purposes of the key changes that we noted in the National Department's APP, where we're saying for Program 2, which is the National Health Insurance, Health Planning and System Enablement, the indicators were reduced by 13 from the previous year. For Program 3, the indicators were reduced by 14, and for Program 5, it was 10. So this slide we are just including for noting purposes that there has been changes in the indicators in the department from the 17-18 to the 18-19 APP. The next slide, we included, we call it the key matters for noting. This is the matters that we would want to bring to the attention of the committee. The first part talks about the vacancies in the portfolio, where we noted that CMS has a CEO vacant post that has been vacant for more than 12 months. Our understanding that is that the appointed process is in progress. And then with NHLS, there's a number of key positions that are vacant, which starts with the CEO, which also has been vacant for more than 12 months. The CFO is on suspension as well for more than 12 months. The head of IT resigned, and by the time we prepared the slides, it was 4 months. And then the head of internal and risk management, which is the internal auditors, was also on suspension. We are aware that some of them, there is disciplinary proceedings taking place, so we just wanted to highlight to committee of these key vacant positions, because when these key positions are vacant, it does have an impact on the performance of the entity. The next slide, we thought we should highlight to the committee the health sector focus areas that we have scoped in the current year. So every year as an organization, we look at specific focus areas that we scope in, and then we do some audit work on. So last year, I think I should highlight the fact that there was work done, but then we did not produce an actual sector report. The team came to the meeting and then they presented the outcomes. But in the current year, we will be producing a health sector report, which is separate from the audit report that we have every year. So for the 17-18 audit, we have scoped in pharmaceuticals, maternal health infrastructure, IT, and emergency medical services. So this scoped in areas, when a health sector report is produced, they then come as a chapter, where in the chapter we are going to set the objectives and the findings that we noted when we were doing the audit. So for pharmaceutical, the objective is stock management at clinics and distribution of medicines to patients. So for the past 2 years, we have been looking at pharmaceutical. I think there's not the year before last, we even then tabled a pharmaceutical report, which was separate. The second one is maternal health. I think we'd want to note, in the prior year, we had a focus area called medical equipment. So in the current year, we won't be looking at medical equipment because we felt we need to give management the time to go effect the findings that we've raised. So then we have scoped in a new focus area called maternal health. This is the first year we are scoping it, and when we then discussed with the NHC, one thing that they did highlight is that because this is the first year we're scoping in, they then requested that we then don't include it in the sector report. However, we will report it in the management report. So the objective is to focus on the delivery of maternal health services at CHCs, and as of today, the six clinics or CHCs that are planned to be visited have been visited. Another focus area is infrastructure, which we have been looking at for the past years. We'll continue looking at the infrastructure with the objectives of looking at the planning, managing and commissioning of new infrastructure, maintenance of the existing infrastructure. So the work is also currently underway. And then the other area that we scope in is IT, information technology, where we look at the objective of the effectiveness and the interoperability of the IT systems within the health sector.
Another focus area that we scoped in the current year is the emergency medical services. I think we'd also want to highlight that it was scoped in the prior years, and then we then gave the management time to go fix the findings that we've raised. So in the current year, we will be doing or following up on emergency medical services, and they will have the following headings. So there's response time, which focuses on recording of the response time, reporting of response time, response to delays, and current and prior response time comparison. We will have general requirements that looks at the state of the facilities that require, for example, the special facilities and the vehicle washing. We'll look at the HR, which will then look at the training of the staff, the driving license and permits, the resources with HPCSA, for example. We'll also look at the VIP requirements, which is the feasibility and tracking hygiene, for example. In the next slide, we'll also look at the equipment, which looks at the management, minimum equipment availability and the maintenance of equipment. And in instances where the EMS was outsourced, we look at the contracts as part of the supply chain management audit and look at the access EMS things that they are complying with the EMS regulation. Lastly, we'll also look at the funding to make sure that the funding that I use coming from the correct source. Then the next part of my presentation then looks at what we call the status of record review. Last year we came to the committee and then we indicated that the Director General has looked at their methodology and we've had certain improvements in our methodology. And part of the improvement that we have done is that usually when we come and report after year end, there's usually a comment that we always come and report things that have happened. So as part of our value add initiatives as an organization, what we're doing, we have a process that we call the status of record review, where we look at the controls before the financial year end. And this, if you look at it, it then replaces the old. We used to have a dashboard in the prior year. So this year, we have what we call a status of record review. What we then do is, the objective of this review is that we look at the key areas of concern that when we look at, we think they may derail the progress of the preparation of the financial statement, the performance report, and compliance with relevant legislation, and consequently might result in a regression of the audit outcome. So those are the areas we look at. And after looking at those areas, we then provide an assessment of the status of the key focus areas that we reviewed. And then we also assess the implementation, the progress of the implementation of action plans and follows up together with the commitment that the management make every year after our audit report is tabled. And we also identify any other matters that we can add value. So when you look at this process, it's a proactive follow-up process where we are saying if these focus areas are not dealt with, there is a possibility that the audit outcome will actually regress. So we look at financial and non-financial information, which is internal and external reports. We also discuss with senior managers. So with the table that we have on slide 18, this is the outcome from that process for the National Department of Health. We looked at quarter one and quarter two, which is the 6 months, ending 31 September. So when we look at the far right, where we have the colors, the red means intervention is required, the green is we are happy, and the yellow-orange is we have concerns in those areas. So the first part that I would like to highlight is the IT management, where we are seeing intervention is required. And this is mainly because there's been a number of findings that we've been raising for the past, some of them raised the past 6 years on IT that has we haven't seen any changes. So then when we then look at those processes, we then highlight them in this process to say if nothing happens in the next six months, the later part of the year, then we were going to have a red for the outcome on IT. And then when we then look at, for example, financial management and performance management, procurement and contract management or compliance is sitting as containing. And when you look at compliance, usually is the suppliers that are not paid within 30 days and also lack of consequence management. The procurement and contract management is the poor management of contracts and the non-compliance of the SCM regulations. When you look at the performance management, it was basically looking at internal audits audited them on specific areas and they hadn't responded to the findings from internal audit. And we should know that internal auditors are also providing assurance with regards to internal controls. So if those findings are not dealt with, then it filters through to our audit as well. And then with financial management, it was accruals and commitments which we found findings there, and we also had an issue with the asset register. When we then go to the next slide, it's the same process that we did at the National Department of Health. However, this is for the actual sector. If we look at, there's an annexure that we have then attached an annexure with the actual pictures of the different provinces individually. Here we try to come to with the overall picture of the sector. So the sector, our provincial auditors did the same process for, most of them did for quarter one, quarter two, and this is how the picture is looking for the sector. And then when you look at, I think I want to also provide context with the HR management is containing. With the HR management, we look at the key management positions. We don't look at the whole structure of the province. So the containing you see there is only based on the key management positions that were mostly vacant in the provinces. And then also when we also look at financial management, there was a lot of issues that we found which has to do, for example, with committed overtime and asset register and contingent liabilities. And a lot of contingent liabilities is because of the legal claims that the provinces are sitting with. So we are saying that it's then affecting their financial management because now they need to deal with it. So we are aware that most of them, because the legal claims are not part of the appropriation, then when these legal claims occur, they then use that money to settle the legal claims. With performance management, the biggest problem there is with the record keeping that we've been raising for a number of years, that when we go to the facilities and we're looking for specific documents, we don't find them. So that is affecting their performance management. And then with procurement and contract management, it's mostly compliance with ACM regulations and irregular expenditure. I'll then talk about the IT. It's a similar problem that we're having also with National, that the IT, they are having challenges with the IT, and we are currently sitting as a red. I think as part of the sector report, there will be a dedicated chapter that talks about the IT in sector that will then update us on how far they are with IT. And the slide where we say key recommendations, we are saying as a committee, we would recommend that they continue with oversight responsibility with reviewing the performance information, planning documents and quarterly reports. And we also recommend that then they conduct a focus intervention studies, which includes visits, which will assess then the state of NHLS, because NHLS currently has so many vacant positions, and we believe that an intervention is required for them to then provide service for the people. I think this is the last slide. We'll then take questions.
Thank you, gentlemen, honorable members. There is the presentation. We have been referred to annexures. So as you will be asking questions, we'll then have to do that cross questioning. Can I get a sign? Right, Honorable Wilson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, may I ask if we can just have 5 or 10 minutes? We have not seen, the presentation was good, but we have not seen the annexures, and I think the annexures go hand in hand with the presentation that we've received. If we can just have a few minutes to digest the annexures against the report that we were given, we would appreciate that. Thank you.
There is a request, Honourable Members, that I don't want to say adjourn. We just give members 5 minutes to go through the presentation vis-a-vis the annexures. Are you okay with that? Can I get the indication from members? Honourable Kopan.
Chair, I think it goes back to my point when we started. We can't be given 5 minutes to read 35 pages because here your annexures is about 35 pages. And here we're dealing about life of people. We need to be serious. We cannot just come and run a presentation like this and then you expect us to engage back on. I don't think it's fair. So 5 minutes is too little, Chair.
They've apologized. I'm humbly requesting. They've apologized. I think they took the point. If we are saying 5 minutes is little, come with a proposal. 15 minutes. Can you agree? 15 minutes? Fine.
Chair, I think I was going to propose to assist them before the questioners to go through with the anesthetists to show them that NHI is dealing with what we can do that. If that will assist also.
Okay. I think that they are fine with that. You can do it. To indicate
Okay, with the annexure A, which is the, it says the scope of annual performance plan, it just gives further background of what we do when we look at, when we actually do the interim review. So the slide 1 and slide 2 is one of the, I presented it, but when you go to slide 3, it then just gives a background of the key consideration that we do when we're reviewing the APP. Does the APP align to the MTSF? Are the indicators complete and relevant? So that annexure A just gives more information on how we perform the review of the APP. And then annexure B, what we also do is we look at the strategic alignment of the APP to the NDP and the MTSF. So when you look at slide 10, what we did is we then said, at the NDP is chapter 10, which is promoting health. Then we link it down to the MTSF, which is outcome 2. And then what we do is all the points that are listed in MTSF, we then highlight them. And in this next slide, we then link them to say program 2, program 3, and program 5 is directly linked to the outcomes as set out in the MTSF. So on this slide, we highlighted program 2, 3, and 5 because those are the programs that we have scoped in for audit. So we in this slide, we are trying to show that we do check the fact that the APP that the department is presenting is aligned to the MTSF, outcomes of the MTSF and the NDP. That is annexure B. Annexure C, what we then also do further, we then look at the objectives as per the E&E to say, are these objectives aligned to the targets in the APP? So what we're doing there, we're making sure that whatever targets are sitting on the APP are reflective of the key objectives that are sitting on the APP. I mean, on the E&E. So the whole annexure C is looking at that whole alignment where we're saying in the first column, we're listing the key objectives per the E&E, and then the next column, we look at the key objectives for the APP, we look at the performance target, and then we also comment, we give a comment or observation. And that comment, we're just making sure to check that, did they include a target in the APP that addresses a key objective as listed in the E&E? So there's a number of slides because we went through the key objectives as per different programs in the AP, in the E&E. Then annexure D is the overview of the key findings that we noted when we were doing the interim review of the APPs. So the first slide that we have is the slide that I presented where we are highlighting the fact that for each entity, did we review the APP, did we note any findings, and were the findings effected before the APP was finalized. So the slides after that then just give a summary of the types of findings we were raising in the entities. So for example, for the National Department of Health, for Program 2, we are saying there's 14 indicators included in the APP. We had 3 indicators that had a finding on well-defined. We had 3 indicators that had a finding on verifiability, and we had 1 target that was not measurable. So this information, we're giving it to the context of the fact that they have effected the changes. We just wanted to highlight to the committee the findings that we were dealing with. The next slide then also talks to the Council for Medical Schemes, where we followed the same process where we listed the programs, listed the number of indicators in the APP, and indicated how many indicators or targets had findings on well-defined verifiability, timbre, and measurability. The same was for Office of the Health and Compliance, where we looked, there's three programs that we looked at, and then there were indicators and targets that had findings on well-defined verifiability and measurability. Then we also have NHLS, where we also looked at three programs that they've been scoped in, and we had findings on well-defined verifiability, the targets were not specific, targets were not measurable, and the indicators were not relevant. However, I think I want to also reiterate that these changes have been effected on the APP. And then when we look at Annexa E is just a budget analysis that we do, where we compare the 17-18 budget for the portfolio to the 18-19 budget, where we also analyze the per program to see how much has increased or decreased. And then the next slide then just indicates of the budget how much goes to the transfer subsidies, and then how much is remaining, and the breakdown of the remaining budget at health, where we are saying 55% of it goes to goods and services, 20% goes to compensation of employees, and 25% to payments of capital assets. The next slide, we then just provide analysis of the conditional grants, where we compare 17, 18, and 18, 19 to look at the movement of the grants that has been allocated. For example, the comprehensive HIV, AIDS, TB, and so it was 47%, 17, 18, and it's now 48%. So that's the purpose of the slide. And then the next slide, we also do an analysis of the transfers that are sent to the entities. When you look at this picture, we can see NHLS in 17, 18, they had 50% of the transfers, and in 18, 19, we see the budget 47% to the transfers. Then Annexa F, it's the one that talks to the status of record review for the health sector, where here, the first slide gives the overview. However, all these slides then brings the picture per province. So the first one is the picture the picture for Eastern Cape, then for Free State, and so that's how the annexes are arranged. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much. Half past 10, we will then be back. Thank you very much. Thank you.
They have one of they are doing medical devices for medicines and food.
They're not doing food.
Yes, you have food at the moment. Because I thought that you need to move into the office. The man they talked about playing medical devices next in the
like you know when you pass the legislation if you need money for food and food out.
Next of my tape, I thought they left of my
tape. I was going to make a favor look here. I want to look at the amendment.
Thank you.
The Department of Work and Health Education.
I don't know if this is only in developed countries, but in South Africa.
So they don't know what to do with the photos, really.
Are you sure? Love you too.
In the next 2 minutes, we're going to start. I think we... Okay. Can we start? Is everybody in? All right. Can I get an indication from Honorable Kopana? It's Honorable Kopana for now. Yes, ma'am. Honorable Wilson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, mine is about the overview in terms of the review of APPs for certain entities. Medical Research Council and Compensation Commission for Occupational Disease, their APPs are not reviewed. If maybe you can explain why are they not reviewed, will they be reviewed later, or what is going to happen? My other worry, Chair, according to the information before us, there's been a reduction on number of indicators here for 2018-2019 APP. The reason, according to what is being presented here, is to streamline the department in preparation for NHI, that's if I captured very well. But the very same thing, Chair, Program 2, that is NHI, the very same NHI, they've reduced about 13 indicators. But it said that the preparation for reducing other APPs for other entities is to so that with the preparation for NHI. But Program 2, the very same NHI, they've reduced 13 indicators. If maybe we can be told, it doesn't make sense for me. They should have been having more indicators to show that we are serious about NHI, not to reduce. Program 3, that is HIV/AIDS and maternal and child health. Already in the country, we are struggling to beat HIV/AIDS. We are still regarded as high in terms of our statistics. And it's been reduced by 14 indicators. And the very same program, too, is having a budget of $22 billion. So I don't understand why do we reduce the indicators, but the challenges are there. Do we have something in place, or what is going to happen? I don't understand it. Program 5, also, about 10 indicators have been reduced, too. And if you check Program 5, it's about hospital, tertiary health services, and human resource development. One of the challenges for us as a country to implement NHI is because we don't have enough human resource in terms of medical doctors and nurses. It is said that according to the government own costing, to implement NHI, we need to triple the numbers of doctors that we have. So, but if you reduce that program, I don't know. What does it mean? How are we going to achieve within this NHI program? The Chair, to support what I was just saying, I think it's on the annexure, it's page 19, the very same program 3. On papers, because the indicators have been reduced, it looks so well because they say indicator, if you check other programs, is 00 here. Indicators not verifiable is zero. It's nice on paper, but it doesn't make sense on the other side. If maybe we can get what is happening. Chair, coming to the status of records review in terms of different provinces, the way it's presented even in pictures, you can see that there's a problem regarding our healthcare system because you see a lot of red for each and every province, which means the problem is there. The very same province where I'm staying, only the yellow, it's only one, at least they had green. Other provinces, there's not even green. It's only yellow and red. So it shows that there is a problem. Normally when you do your presentation to us in figures, though you came with pictures this time, but the pictures still depict that there are problems in different provinces. I also want to find out, I don't find anything about the Northwest
and the Western Cape. Was there any specific reason why you omitted them? I don't find them in this presentation. If maybe you can explain. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Wilson.
Thank you, Chair. I'm principally covered by my colleague. I do find it extremely stressful that indicators and targets have been reduced in preparation for NHI. You cannot have a health system without an effective health. You can't have an NHI without an effective health system. When you're cutting targets and indicators, you're reducing health and systems and not meeting targets. It's an awful... I agree with my colleague. It doesn't make sense at all. And I do find that that indeed vacancies are a huge issue. 12 months without a CEO, CFO is quite beyond comprehension, particularly in light of what has been indicated in the annexures and the failures of every province. This is also indicative that there's a serious problem in the health sector. The fact that not one province even comes close to complying with to key controls is severely alarming. And I think what this is indicating is that we cannot institute NHI because we do not have an effective health system. You can't have NHI if you don't have effective health to offer to the poor and vulnerable out there, and that is just not here. This whole presentation shows us that that is actually, we are butting up against a rock and a wall at the moment. Thank you.
Before you respond, and I know that you're going to respond, some of our questions, honourable members, are questions that are maybe relevant to be asked to the department. I'm not saying they're not going to respond. They'll have to respond, but the issues of indicators that have been reduced, increased in this program, reduced from this program, the issue of the NHI, the state, I'm honest about it. I'm not trying, and I'm not undermining your questions, but I'm just trying to indicate to you that, in fact, some of these questions are questions that are relevant to be asked to the National Department of Health. But nevertheless, I will request them to respond. Thank you very much.
I think also in future, when we discuss anything regarding health, maybe my suggestion is the department should also be available that time so that they can also respond to certain things. I know they will be coming on their own, but for AG to come alone without the department being here, I think it's also not right.
AG, FFC, monitoring and evaluation, if I'm not mistaken. Let me not go there. Can I, if there are any other hands that are, okay. You may respond, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. With regards to the question on indicators, I think I'll reiterate what the Chair has indicated. What we do when we review the APP, we review what is presented to us by the department, and we take the reasons that they provide to us. So when we pick this indicator, that's the reason why we included it on the slide to say to the committee, please note that when we look at, when we do a comparison between 17-18, 18-19 programs, there has been a reduction in the indicators on program 2, 3, and 5. And I think the reason that we provided is on the slide, that's the reason that we were provided as well as auditors. So I think on that one that would then recommend it that the committee really then direct the question to the department. We were highlighting it to assist the committee with the changes on the 18-19 APP. And then when we also look at the MRC and CCOD, with CCOD, we are aware that they are behind with submitting their financial statements and the actual audit itself. So I think in the current year we are only auditing, only starting to audit 2014-15, I think, if I'm mistaken. So because they are behind with the regulatory audit, even the performance information relating to that we haven't looked at, and that is the reason why you don't see a review of the CCOD. With MRC, the reason behind it was that they've been clean for the couple of number of years, and if we look at the purpose of doing the APP review, it's an early warning where we think that there will be concerns that regarding measurability and relevance. So with the prior number of years, MRC has been clean, which means that then they were fine with the measurability and relevance, and that's why we did not perform APP review in their APP, in the for 18-19. And then with status of record review, it is well noted, Chair, I forgot to mention the fact that Northwest and Western Cape, the status of record review was not done, because with the process of status review, like I said, it's a value-add process that we then we assist in the provinces. So when our teams in the provinces for Northwest and Western Cape, I know specifically Western Cape, where they then approached management to say they want to do a status of record review, the indication they received was that there hasn't been any change since year end. So then it was not going to be full engagement, because whatever they were going to find on the internal controls is the same that they've reported at year end. And that's the reason why Western Cape, there is no status of record review. So I think the message they're saying to us, whatever status score is at year end is the same. And with Northwest, they just they had requested that they delayed in their review, but part of the reasons were that there's a number of controls, there's nothing much that has changed. So they did not see the excess that it was going to be fruitful. And that's why those two provinces, we don't have a status of record review for. I think I've covered that on the question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. I think those were the two questions. But safe to say, first, I think we will have the AG and we'll have to look into this issue that was raised earlier of the report coming late to members. I think we have to improve on that. If my memory serves me well, it is only this time we have never had that challenge with the office of the AG without being defensive. Two, I am humbly reminding members that the office of the AG, the FFC, monitoring and evaluation are presentations that are to assist us when then entities are here and the department is here, so that as they are presenting, as we will then be reading, because we have to read, as we will be reading the presentation documents that have been circulated to us, because when we left we got all the documents, I can bear testimony. So as we are reading, as we have been reading, then the SSF, the AG, has raised some other issues. We'll then have to collect that, note that, so that when the department comes here, the department will say, make an example, we have improved on HR, and we will then say, hang on, when? Because we have then been reported, the Office of the Auditor General was here and reflected APC. Monitoring and evaluation was here, and this is what they have reflected on us. So that's why we are starting with them. And I'm not implying that we must not ask questions. The only frustration as an activist that I'm always having with auditors, and I think that's how they take samples. They just take one pack, and I'm making an example. I always ask myself, what is happening with the rest? If these two samples that they have identified, they've picked, are fine, do they? So that's even at my previous work as an activist in one of the organizations where I was a national treasurer, I used to say, but you can't, you don't. So I'm saying that is the only issue. Maybe it's something that needs to be discussed and look into. Maybe the editor, the Auditor General's office will reflect on that at some point. But what I want us to understand, the importance of starting with these institutions before entities and the department come in front of us, is to empower us. But yeah, thank you very much. And we will still monitor into, so that when you come towards the end of the year, we are then able to really have that picture. The only thing that I want to, you will also look into that. I am not comfortable. Maybe I'm too. I don't know. I'm not comfortable when we don't get the whole picture of provinces. Even if they are, there's nothing. Even if you take Western Cape, Western Cape has always been a good girl in the whole scheme of provinces. Please, we will have to look into that. So next time we must get the picture of the entire picture of our provinces. Same applies with entities, but I do see that entities, all of them, you do reflect. But with the provinces, I'm a bit uncomfortable that we've only reflected on 7 out of the 2, and the response is that, well, we may be wasting time, things are fine. But I for the benefit of us, as we said, these processes are processes that are to empower us. But thank you very much. Now we will get FFC. I think they are here. They will introduce themselves, unfortunately. For the benefit of technology, I'm advised that we just have to have some 3 minutes break so that everything is being connected. And then after that, the FCC will introduce itself, and then we... Okay.
Thank you. water.
I think there's a lever under there. Which
no, but in the list.
Oh, it's not working. Oh, I'm sorry.
The occupational health.
Yeah, unfortunately.
That's when we go to okay, the orientation. They said people complained and they said, no, welcome to
Parliament.
Okay, the FFC is ready. Can we, they will introduce themselves for the benefit of members and everybody.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. I'm the Chairperson of the Finance and Fiscal Commission. I'm Professor Daniel Plaikie, and we've got our new CEO, Dr. Kay Brown, who has joined us on the 1st of April. Dr. Kay Brown was the former Chief Director of Expenditure Planning in the National Treasury. She has joined us from the 1st of April. And then immediately next to me is Henry Eckstein, who is, like I said, in the Cape Flats, Eckstein, but Eckstein they wanted. He's the Parliamentary Liaison Officer of the FFC. Next to him is the guy with the beard, is Khalid Dawood. Khalid is our Research Manager for Provincial Budget Analysis. And then we've got Eddie Rakabe, who's the Research Manager for Fiscal Policy. That's who we are, Chairperson.
Okay. Who is going to start?
I'll be doing that. Thank you. Chair, what we're going to talk to you about is essentially using our lens as the Finance and Fiscal Commission from the lens of the Division of Revenue, the Appropriation, the Money Bills, the Intergovernmental Fiscal Act, but moreover the whole question about the fiscal decentralization question with regard to health and also how the health system is decentralized. We will try to set the fiscal and operational efficiency scene. We look at health and the economy, health policy planning regimes and strategic goals, overall assessment that we've made of the annual performance plans, the provincial budget analysis, and then we will set some concluding remarks. What I wanted to say to the Honourable Committee from the start is that we are in broad agreement with the Minister of Finance, so the Minister of Health, that there are four matters that need to be resolved over the next year and years going forward. The one is the financing of health. And the financing of health is directly linked to the National Health Insurance Fund. We ourselves, given the issues of access and equity to health and the distribution of health services, we ourselves are in principle supporting a National Health Insurance Scheme, National Health Insurance Fund, because we think it's the right thing to do. There are challenging nuts and bolts with regard to that, and we are awaiting the bill so that we can actually see what are the matters in that bill as it relates to the intergovernmental fiscal system, but also the health system as a whole. The second thing that we agree with is the issue of maintenance needs to be looked at. Maintenance of infrastructure, hospitals, clinics, community health centers, and also maintenance of medical health equipment. It's a critical matter that needs attention from the whole of government, particularly in the minister and the the cabinet, but also that needs attention from the leadership and management at the out. The third thing that we agree with the minister with is there's a need to look at human capital management and the resourcing of it. And how, who manages health, who deliver health services, how do we deal with the professional nature of health service delivery as it relates to a range of disease patterns, the burden of disease in particular, but also delivery of health for children and adults and older persons, and so on and so forth. And the last thing which we agree with is the whole issue of procurement. Now, the reason why I'm raising that and why we agree with that, because while the system has locates responsibilities to provincial government relative to national government on policy questions, but the issue is that when things go wrong in the health system, it happens internationally, but especially in South Africa, when things go wrong in health and education, which are the two shared functions, people don't look local, they look at national. They look at national government for intervention, they blame national government depending who the minister is and depending on the interaction. And those are critical matters which we need to start resolving soonest. And those are critical matters which also obviously link to a new health insurance fund, the system reconfiguration and the practice around that. So I thought it's important to say that because I haven't heard all of those things. That's the thing, those things is what the health system is actually dependent on. If you don't have those four, you don't have a proper health system. So when the minister, and we're not speaking for him, it's the fact that we are, based on our own assessment over the years, based on our own research, based on our own way of interacting around the policy, financials, and the systems questions around health, those are our views, and we're in agreement with those things that needs to be resolved. And it needs to be resolved rather sooner than later between, within the policy environment, legislative environment, but also between the minister and the provincial MECs in all the provinces, so that if some stuff become clearer. But we thought that we need to highlight for you what are the things that the Department of Health has been saying in terms of improving fiscal and operational efficiencies. There's a view that one of the things that they, a part of the plan is to reduce, rather part of the plan is to reduce accruals through adherence to stricter budget controls and timely monitoring. And that in a sense has got to do with how do we manage the finances and the fiscal arrangements inside health departments so that things can be done in the way it needs to be done. And that's a very honorable matter to look at because if you have accruals, it increases the liability on the system to deliver. The second part of the plan is a consensus over the use of transversal contracts. Now, that transversal contract seems to be as an outcome of the Chief Procurement Officer's interventions around a range of matters across government. So the transversality of the contract, as on the one end, is to look at economic efficiencies, is to look at to look at issues around scale. If you order more, you can get more for less, and so on and so forth. So we would agree with that. Then there's the expanded coverage, is the third part of the plan, on central chronic medical distribution and dispensary. I know it's a long acronym. I don't like acronyms. That's why I read it to you. The coverage to on-clock health facilities. And that's the network that's currently happening where people are going to get their chronic medication with in-house as a way of facilitating access to health. And that's probably one of a particular pillar that we don't know what the bill is saying, or the draft bill is saying, but that's clearly one of the pillars of of the operation of a national health insurance fund. There's a need to establish and resource claims administration units to ensure early and effective processing of medical legal claims. You know the story around that as a collective, honorable members. We don't have to go into that. That's a key matter. I mean, we all are concerned about the rising bill of legal claims against the health system. A fifth point that's been raised is the fast-track implementation of electronic access to lab tests and the electronic filing system. That's clearly a matter of looking at the administrative and systems capacity within the health system. Improve infrastructure spending efficiency through standardized design, normative unit costs, and reduced variation orders. I've spoke about that when I raised the issue of maintenance. Improve infrastructure planning, aligning capital spending program with recurrent cost implications, and part of the recurrent cost implications are clearly matters where hiring of facilities and that, and there's a need to look at that, but also hiring of those strong medical equipment which is considered as capital investments into the medical arm. Resolve ongoing audit performance by provinces. You probably heard what the Auditor General was saying about that and where that is. That's still a matter of concern in any case, because truth be told, we should work hard to get clean audits across government and try to minimize. I'm not saying something because tomorrow I'm going to have to account to the Public Finance Committee about our own FSC on matters. But the point is, part of the many of the audit issues is got to do with error, mistakes on the one hand, and then there's fraud and corruption on the other hand, and then there's irregular practices and others. So the point is that that reduce accruals with the issues around budget control has to link up with poor audit performance by provinces. So what goes for provinces goes for national departments, goes for across the whole system of government and governance, or in particular within the health sector. Chair, then the our view is that there's the relationships between health and care performance and the economy. We know that we're experiencing muted growth within the economy. But as Treasury presented in the last budget, there's going to be slow growth. We're probably going to see it on the other side of the next 6 months of the month, of the year. But a healthy economy is integral to a functional healthcare system. And the issue there is that if people are employed and people look after their own health, the economy and the health system to connect with each other, but moreover, people will be able to take care of their own health. I can't speak to. Okay, let me not get into off track. The current weak economy environment could affect health strategic goals and reinforce stagnation. You know the issue around commodity pricing and be able to purchase expensive medical equipment to be able to put in the hospitals. If we don't grow, we don't have enough fiscal space, and as a result, there's not enough money to buy some of these things, and then things get offloaded to outgoing years. And that's an important matter that we just want to bring to as a context. Some things we can't resolve because we haven't adequately taken advantage of the current uptake in the global economy. We had our own challenges as a country. The relationship between economic performance and health is bidirectional. The point we've made about the weak economy and its connection with health strategic goals, so it has will have an effect on implementation of national health reforms, which we dearly need, because the health system constructed, designed in 1994 cannot be a response to health in 2018. And it goes for everything that we do in the country. It's like what Einstein has said, that you can't solve the problems with one paradigm, one thinking, and then you think you can use the same paradigm and thinking to fix 2018 problems. The world doesn't work like that. So we need to be a little bit innovative there. So the nature and the health, the nature of the healthcare systems do affect productivity, and we know people get sick. In certain provinces, there are particular diseases, communicable and others. Diabetics, you get TB and others that affect certain parts of our country, especially during winter, wet conditions, bad housing that people have in certain places in the country, and obviously because there's waterborne diseases and people get sick and then they don't go to work. There's also the issue of early retirement. I remember years ago some of us wanted to push when I still worked at the Treasury that the retirement age was 17. We had lots of battles with the union, because some of us, now that we're close to 60s and 70s, we actually want at the retirement age at 70. But then you are not able to get the young into the economy. The disease prevalence imposes huge cost burden on the economy. And that's simply the issue of HIV and AIDS and other communicable diseases and interventions that need to be made, and obviously the health system and the facilities need to respond to that. And the economy needs to kick in terms of the solidarity aspect there to our citizens, and then obviously we're going to have problems around the health spending. So I'm going to hand over to Eddie Rakabe, who is our fiscal policy manager, and then immediately when Eddie is finished, we will hand over to Dr. Khalid Dawood, and then we'll do the concluding and we'll take your questions.
Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. I'm going to take you through the part that deals with the health strategy goals and the overall assessment of the annual performance plan as the invitation was sent to the FSP. So I think just for a start, I think the Chairperson spoke about the four integral reform measures that are required in the health sector, in particular in relation to financing, the HR, infrastructure, and procurement. So our assessment from where we're sitting is that we find that the health sector is deriving its delivery mandate from numerous strategic plans. And those four areas which the Chairperson of the FFC spoke about, they need to be reflected in the strategic plans. What we see mostly in the strategic plan is that you mostly find the goals which are mostly clinical outcomes. So you don't necessarily see the other elements of the health sector which is required to make sure that the health sector as a system functions effectively. So we need to see HR-related issues reflected in the strategic plans. We need to see infrastructure-related issues in the strategic plans. We also need to see procurement issues, which have been a problem in the sector lately. They need to be reflected in this strategic goals. Now, the other issue with this, the multiplicity of strategic goals they create some problem from a monetary perspective, because then when you have these multiple strategic goals, you tend to have multiple goals which then dissipate strategic focus and also overstretch their budget. So we've got the little budget that we have, about the 300 and so billion rand allocated to the health sector, which is overstretched across multiple objectives, and as a result, you end up not being able to achieve your objective because your funding or your resources are overstretched. What you also see is that the policy objective and the delivery targets overlaps between
the MTEF and the MTSF through it. So from a monitoring perspective, if we have set ourselves certain goals within a specific MTSF period or MTF period, but we find that the goals overlap this period, it becomes very difficult from a technical point to assess whether how far we've gone in terms of allocating budget and also making sure that the budget has actually responded to make sure that those outcomes are realized. So as I said, we the overlapping delivery targets, and we've got overlapping delivery targets and budget timelines, which hinders efforts to align annual performance delivery goals and also to strategic plans. They also make it difficult to measure the performance in relation to the budget allocation. Now, the next slide here just indicates the linkages between our medium-term health goals in relation to the linkage between the medium-term goals and as well as the short-term goals. So in certain areas, you do find that linkages. For instance, in the first case where over the medium-term strategic framework, the goal is to prevent and reduce disease burden, you also find that there is that kind of follow-through when you look at when you align those goals to the long-term goals, and also you also find those goals reflected in the APP annual performance plans. So we do find those linkages in the annual performance plans, but that is not in all the cases, because in certain cases you would find that the annual performance plan strategic goals are too many, so it's very difficult then to link them to a particular overall strategic goals. But we can safely say that in the assessment that we have done for this current annual performance plan, we do find those linkages between the actual short-term strategic goals as well as the longer-term strategic goals as reflected in the national development, as reflected in the national plan. Now, going forward, this is much more for public information. What we see again is that the budget is actually responsive to the health outcomes. If you look at some of the key health outcomes, you find that the life expectancy is actually improving as per our long-term health goals. You also find that under 5 mortality is also improving. What is of concern here, which the department may want to address, is the consistency in terms of using the sources of information which they use to monitor this particular health outcomes, because we've got the statistics, official statistics from Statistics South Africa, but we also sometimes the department tends to compare these particular outcomes with what the research that would have been made by the Medical Research Council. So the question is now, which source of information do we use to monitor whether we're making progress in terms of these outcomes? Because when you look at status, it suggests that we are not necessarily making sufficient good progress. But when you look at the alternative sources from your Medical Research Council, they are suggesting that we are making a good progress. So we just need to decide which statistics do we use. In terms of the when you look at the other performance indicators, the number of people who are on antiretroviral treatment has increased phenomenally from about 1.4 million in 2011 to 3.6 million in 2016. And I think the proposal is to take this number to about 6 million in 2019-2020. So the question, I think, from a strategic perspective is whether this phenomenal increase in number of people on ART should be seen as an improvement from the health system perspective, or whether focus should now be shifting to prevention, making sure that many people do not contract the disease. The same thing with TB treatment. The cure rate is improving, but it also remains the leading cause of death. So why are we seeing improving cure rate, but at the same time TB remains the leading cause of death? So it suggests that there is something that we're not doing right. The other most worrying thing is that we're losing the battle on non-communicable diseases. So we see that the non-communicable diseases are becoming the leading cause of death since 2008. Again, the question is now the focus needs to to shift from communicable. Of course, there's a need for balance, but now that non-communicable diseases are emerging as one of our leading disease problem, this is where the resources should be shifting towards from a strategic perspective. Chairperson, I will now move over to our assessment of the current APP that was tabled in Parliament here, just to make some few viewpoints on what we have observed. So, just starting with the program one within the National Health Department, which is responsible for administration. So, what we know there is that the program accounts for about 1% of total budget and 29% of total staff complement. And when you look at the APP, the key strategic objective of this program administration is to improve the provincial audit outcomes. But what has been happening over the time is that the program has demonstrated consistent underperformance over the years. Consistently, we've always found that at most there are only three provinces which are able to receive unqualified audit reports over time, despite this program having been established specifically to make sure that there is improvement in provincial audit outcomes. And when you look at the size of this program from a staff complement perspective, it is quite huge. It accounts for about 29%. I think it's the second largest program in the department. So it is worrying that this program is not able to achieve the strategic objective which they set out in the annual performance plan. And what we are saying here is that the department needs to consider resizing this particular program and perhaps redirecting the resources within the program to health district offices where you actually need more hands on deck, so that you put more people at the health district where they will be able to manage the budget and ensure that the audit outcome of the province improve. Now, going to program two, which is called National Health Insurance Health Planning and System. This program is allocated about 4% of the total budget of the national department and comprised of about 10% of the staff complement. The worrying thing in this program is that the bulk of the allocation in flows towards consultancy fee, which will be growing about 400% over the medium term expenditure framework. When you make an assessment of the key performance areas or the key performance indicators, there is a total of about 12 performance areas under this program, and among those strategic goals would include the introduction of the NHI legislation, implementing an e-health strategy, developing NHI beneficiary registry, and also establishing the National Medicine Doc Surveillance Center. So this program is critical for the establishment of the national health insurance system. But when you see the resources allocated in this program going towards consultancy fee, it's a bit worrying, because it means that there is no sufficient capacity being built within the program to ensure the rolling out of the national health insurance. So the commission is of the view that the introduction of the NHI bill should be well synchronized with other developments in the reform. In particular, the legislation should be underpinned by clear design of the institutional architecture. So the view that the commission is holding, although it remains preliminary because the NHI bill has not been tabled and the commission has not necessarily made official comments on the bill, is that we need to sort out intrinsic nitty-gritty, such as what would be the ultimate role of the provinces in the NHI, and how the flow of the fiscal transfer be going to be happening. Whether the provincial equitable share formula would still flow to the provinces, and if it's still in what shape will the province what shape will the provincial equitable share formula take? Whether it should go to the hospitals, whether it should go to the district health offices. So those are the nitty-gritties that needs to be resolved before we can speak about the NHI legislation. What you also note saying here is that the department can benefit from a synergizing its strategic goals on health digital platforms. So when you assess the annual performance plan, you find that there are too many performance indicators which are essentially related to the introduction of health information management system. So from the Commission's perspective is our view is that if those strategic performance indicators should be synergized under the broad objective of introducing the health an integrated health management system, the department would then be able to reduce the number this high number of strategic goals within, and therefore there will be much more focus within the program. So as I said, we need to build internal IT capacity in the department going forward, especially because now that we're going into the second phase of rolling out the NHI, and also to make sure that we reduce reliance on consultants. So this e-digital platforms that the department is currently experimenting with, they are going to need IT experts who on a timely basis who needs to maintain the system. So if we're not building the capacity, we're always going to be relying on the consultants. So there is a need again to start planning for future taking over of the platforms. Again, when we look at the program two in particular, is that the NHI is going through the second phase of implementation. But when you make an assessment of some of the key strategic goals which the department had set out to achieve during the first phase of implementation, it's not very clear whether we have achieved all of those objectives. But we are already moving into the second phase. Programs which were introduced under the first phase overlaps into the second phase, while others are still yet to be rolled out. For instance, the NHI beneficiary registry, as well as the integrated health information management system. So the second phase will entail, among other things, the establishment of the NHI fund. But what is a bit worrying from our assessment is that the annual performance plan is silent on the delivery timelines for setting up the fund, the NHI fund, despite the pronouncement having been made in the 2017 budget as well as the 2018 budget. So you don't see this particular milestone, which is essential for the implementation of the NHI, being reflected in the annual performance plan. Now, with Program 3, which is on HIV and AIDS, the TB, maternal and child care, this program received the second highest share of the total budget of about 20 billion, of which 98% is transferred to the provinces. So this program essentially administers the comprehensive HIV and AIDS grant, and its main strategic goal is implement treatment and the prevention intervention of HIV and AIDS. So as I mentioned earlier, the department intends to put 6.1 million people on antiretroviral programs by 2021, and also 40 million people will be screened and tested annually for HIV and related diseases. So what you see is that there is this again, the number of people who would be on ART treatment is increasing over the next medium-term expenditure framework. But when you look at the growth in the budget allocation for this specific program, it's not growing at the same. So it suggests that there could be some inconsistency between what the department would wish to, the number of people the department would wish to place on the HIV program, as well as the funding required to allow them to have those people on the program. So program three strategic goals are fewer from the Commission's perspective. That is more commendable because then there is more focus within the program. But what we are noting there is that the department should direct more focus on preventative measures under this program. In particular, the program objectives within especially the HIV, the comprehensive HIV and AIDS grant should be aligned to the HIV and AIDS life skills education grant, which is currently under the Department of Basic Education, because that's where the prevention, that's where the prevention should focus. So again, the commendable thing in the current budget is that the baseline allocation for the comprehensive HIV and AIDS grant has been preserved in the 2018-19 budget. But what is worrying is that we continue to see this increase in scope coverage of the grant, because now it's not only focusing on HIV and AIDS treatment, but there's also other elements which are being covered by the grant. So it's a concern around overstretching the resources and what it essentially can achieve with those little resources. Program 4 on primary health care services. This program is responsible for overseeing and supporting the primary health care for which provinces are responsible. It is the second largest program in terms of staffing, I think with about 27% staff complement. But when you look at the budget share, it's got the smallest budget share of about 1%. Again, I need to mention here that the aim of this this program is not necessarily to deliver the services at the provincial level. It's because it's sitting at the national level. Mainly, the role is to oversee. So the point about the budget being the smallest does not necessarily mean that primary health care is under resources, is under resourced at the provincial level. It's just that at the national level, within the department itself, this program receives the lowest share of the budget. And there are 9 strategic objectives under this program, among which includes elimination of malaria, which is a new strategic goal for this current medium-term expenditure framework. Improving accessibility of district health services, improving governance and leadership of healthcare of health districts. So as I said, the resources allocated to Program 4 do not necessarily match the quantum required for attaining the strategic intentions, because as I said, provinces are responsible for delivering the health outputs. And the result from the Office of the Health Standards Compliance suggests that the program is not fully effective, because when you look at the performance of hospitals in the table on the slide, you still find that some hospitals are not doing well, especially in relation to issues of governance, which is what this particular program should be assisting the district with. So, yeah. Program 5 on hospital tertiary health services and human development. This program accounts for the largest share of the total departmental budget, around 47% of the 47 billion which is allocated to the department goes to this program, and comprises about 18% of the total staff. The budget is mainly composed of 3 conditional grants, which is the National Treasury Services Grant, the Health Professional Training Grant, Health Facility Revalidation Grant, and the some part of the NHI grant. So when you look at this program, essentially 95% of the program budget is constituted of conditional grants, and there are 11 strategic objectives under this program. So for the current financial year, 2018-2019, the Health Facility Revitalization Grant and the indirect component of the National Health Grant has been reduced by about 511 million and 3 million respectively for the 2018 MTEF period. And from our perspective, from the Commission's perspective, this reduction may likely affect, although it was unavoidable, it may likely affect the department's infrastructure delivery program. And what we seek to highlight here is that given the current budgetary constraint, there is a need for much more focus on maintenance within this particular program to make sure that all the facilities comply with the ideal clinic model. And this will be essential going forward as we roll out NHI implementation, in that all the health facilities
would have been made compliant with the ideal clinic model through the resources that are allocated from the health infrastructure conditional grant. So essentially what we're saying directly is that because of the current constraint, we need to shift the focus more away from construction of new facilities towards maintenance of existing facilities. And in that way, you also reduce your cost implications for recurrent functions going forward through the new facilities that would have been built through. But in certain cases where hospitals need to be refurbished, of course, provinces should be given the leeway to make if there's a need for replacement, obviously all facilities have got to be replaced. But where there is an opportunity for the provinces to maintain existing infrastructure, the commission's viewpoint is that the allocation for infrastructure, for health infrastructure infrastructure grant, should then be redirected in that way. And again, we are saying here that in its human capital training plans, the department should ensure that the budget makes sufficient provision for absorbing the qualified nurses and the doctors. This has been one of the critical problem within especially in Gauteng, where the nurses and to a certain extent some doctors who have qualified, who have been supported by the department of by the provincial department of health, are not being absorbed, or there is no sufficient budget to absorb them. So in the health professional training development grant, what we are suggesting is that there should be this sufficient provision made to ensure that as the doctors that we send to Cuba return, there is sufficient budget in the provincial department to ensure that we absorb them. But again, there's also a need to reduce the number of people who are being sent to Cuba, because it has got future cost implication, especially in the current fiscal constraint where we are not necessarily sure that the budget will keep on growing at the same rate at which we had wanted. So this might put additional pressure on the COE cost of employee budget if we don't plan our resourcing properly. And my last point, Chairperson, would be on Program 6, which is Health Regulations and Compliance Management. This program is allocated 1.8 billion or in 2018-19 to discharge the regulatory functions of the department, and over 94% of the program allocation is transferred to the health entity. So as you can see throughout the program is that there is significant transfer of functions which is being played by this program within the department. And the main strategic goal of the program over the 2018 medium-term expenditure framework is to establish the National Public Health Institute of South Africa. Now, what we are saying here is that the department already has got 5 health facilities and 6 statutory councils, and therefore there is a need to reduce, to minimize this proliferation of entities because they come with expectations, requirements for oversight, and also they also sometimes muddy the accountability lines between the department and the entity. So what we essentially say is that if there is an opportunity to create a certain a specific unit within the department, rather take that approach than creating this independent entity. And also emphasis should be placed on addressing the weaknesses identified by these entities within the public health care sector. Chairperson, if you allow me, I'd like to hand over to my colleague Khalif to complete the presentation.
Okay.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members. I'll just take you through the provincial budget analysis section and the national entities as requested in the invite. Just in terms of the context We know that health is a concurrent function as outlined in Schedule 4 of the Constitution. So this means that the National Department of Health sets the strategic goal for health, but the provincial departments of health implement health policy and is responsible for health sector outcomes. Now, Chapter 3 of the Constitution, which deals with cooperative governance, requires the National Department of Health to support provincial departments of health in exercising statutory functions, and failure to do so may compromise health outcomes in the sector. So therefore, it's quite important for the National Department of Health to play that supportive role, taking into consideration the constitutional requirements of the independence of provinces, but also at the same time acknowledging that health sector outcomes require that both sectors and both spheres work together cooperatively. Moving on to the next slide, just looking at the health budget, this table contains the health budget for the sector as a whole, comprising the provincial departments of health and the international department of health. In total, the health budget accounts for 13.9% of the total government spending, so it's quite a significant chunk of national government spending, and rightly so, because it's an important priority within the National Development Plan as well as your medium-term strategic framework. Now, within a fiscally constrained environment, the Commission welcomes the fact that the health budget increases in real terms. So the health budget has been protected in a way where many other sectors have actually seen their budgets declining. And this we welcome because it's an important priority for government. Now, national health insurance, as we heard in the earlier part of the presentation, is an important priority, and therefore gets allocated 4.1 billion rand over the 2018 medium-term expenditure framework. Now, when you look at the economic classification in terms of the way the budget is allocated in terms of the line items, compensation of employees account for 62% of the budget. So that's basically two-thirds of your total budget goes towards compensation. So it's quite a significant amount, and we know that health generally is a resource-intensive function. However, our concern is that the high spending on compensation could crowd out the ability of health departments to address other spending priorities, such as, for example, on shortages in medicines, as well as critical medical equipment. We know how widespread malfunctioning equipment is, or in fact the absence of important critical equipment, and we need to keep a balance between compensation but also at the same time critical equipment in your medical facilities. Now, moving on to the next slide, and this relates to the table in terms of the budget. When you look at the where the budget is allocated in terms of the functional areas, we see that the bulk of it is actually allocated to your district health service program. And this particular program is responsible for the implementation of health services within your district as well as your community level, and specifically with respect to your primary health care facilities. Now, when we look at the APP for the National Department of Health, we welcome the fact that the National Department of Health has an indicator there that aims to improve the quality of service delivery through the ITIL Clinic initiative, as well as to improve leadership and governance at district level. And the earlier slide showed that at your hospitals, one of the key weaknesses is the area of governance. So we welcome the fact that the National Department of Health is identifying the problem, but also at the same time formulating an indicator to address that problem. And we need to monitor that to see whether the department is going to achieve that. The Commission also welcomes emphasis on primary health care facilities, and previously we did recommend that funding of primary health care facilities should be in line with the national norms and standards. Now, moving on to your conditional grants that are transferred to your provincial departments of health, and here what we did was to basically assess the spending performance on these conditional grants over a period of 5 years, from 2012, 2013, to 2016, 2017, to identify what your average spending trends are. And we welcome the fact that most of your health conditional grants spend close to 100% of your grants, with the exception of your National Health Facility grant, health facility revitalization grant, as well as your NHI grant. Now, when a review of the NHI conditional grant was done, it showed that you were treating problems with little evidence of impact, and specifically the challenges that were identified related to lack of coordination between the national, provincial, and district levels, poor planning, and then also provinces were uncertain in terms of what the funding should actually be used for. The NHI grant has been phased out and continues as an indirect grant at national level. Now, underspending of the health facility revitalization grant is largely related to a critical lack of capacity at your implementing agent, and the main implementing agent that provinces use is Public Works. An additional challenge is achieving cost effectiveness of service delivery, and this is largely because the incentives of the implementing agent is not always aligned with the provincial health department. And an example of this is that the AG will hold provincial health departments accountable for the spending on the health facility revitalization grant, yet your implementing agent plays a significant role in how that grant is actually spent, but is not held accountable by the AG for that spending. So there's a disjunction in terms of the accountability framework that needs to be closed. Now, moving on to the next slide, and this basically shows you the projections over the MTF period in terms of where the funding is going and the growth patterns. And what we see here is that over the MTF period, allocations to your comprehensive HIV/AIDS grant, your national tertiary services, and your health facility revitalization grant receive the bulk of transfers from National Department of Health. And what specifically related to your health facility revitalization grant, given the poor performance on this grant, as we have indicated earlier on, is a baseline reduction of 511 million rand. That's effected over the MTF period, which is a real decline of 1%. Now, the Commission has previously stated that when there are any baseline reductions to grants, it should be preceded by an expenditure review to determine the extent to which the objectives of the grant is going to be affected. So sometimes when you cut a grant, we don't take into consideration that there could be unintended consequences. For example, a hospital could be in the process of construction, but because it's a three-year project, the grant is cut and the construction basically has to come to a standstill. So those are some of the unintended consequences that can arise if one just slashes a grant without actually doing a proper assessment of its impact. In addition, the National Department of Health should conduct a thorough review of infrastructure procurement and implementation in the sector and implement measures to unblock barriers that's slowing down infrastructure delivery. So we earlier identified procurement as a major obstacle, and here what we are calling for is that the National Department of Health should do a proper review of the procurement and implementation of infrastructure specifically to identify what those blockages are and try to take or initiate strategies to address those blockages jointly with provinces. Moving on to the next slide, we have spoken about this already, but I just want to emphasize the last point over here, that even though the National Department of Health has identified or set a goal in its APP of 5 provincial departments in terms of achieving improved audit outcomes with no emphasis of matter, there's no indicator to explain how the National Department aims to assist provinces to achieve this target. So that's just to emphasize the point that we have made earlier on. Moving on to the next slide, fruitless and wasteful expenditure by provinces have increased from 871 million in 2013-2014 to just over a billion rand in 2016-17. And this is reported cases of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We're not sure what the amount of fruitless and wasteful expenditure is for unreported cases. Now, within a fiscally constrained environment where budgets are under severe pressure, increased fruitless and wasteful expenditure is costly for provinces. And this is something that one needs to monitor going forward. Now, just finally, just speaking about the national health entities, national health entities account for between 3% and 4% of the national health budget over the 2018 MTF period. Allocations to health entities, if you look at the declines over the MTF period, with the exception of your health laboratory services and your health product regulatory authority. Now, the health product regulatory authority is a new entity that was established in 2017-2018 and received its first transfer from the National Department of Health in 2018-2019. Previously, it was a function that was done internally, which focused on regulating medicines and medical devices. But now, with it being a standalone entity, it allows the entity to retain revenue collected from pharmaceutical companies and also be able to operate independently. And of course, there is a consideration that these entities need to be monitored, so we need to carefully consider the underlying rationale and whether it's justified in terms of creating these entities, given the spending capacity and oversight responsibilities required to monitor the activities. And just to emphasize, Program 6 on the National Department of Health focuses on public entities, but when you look at the performance indicators, there's none that actually speaks to or is related to actually monitoring public entities, and this is something that we need to interrogate a bit further. On that note, Chairperson, I'd like to hand over to our FFC Chair to close with the final slide. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Chairperson and Honourable Members, we are of the view that health remains one of the highly protected budget areas, despite the level of consolidation that's gone on. And Khalid did show the real increases in the health budgets. Outcomes are increasingly becoming responsive to budget and policy interventions. While the allocation of resources are targeting key areas of intervention in line with the Sustainable Development Goals and the National Development Plan, a major concern for the Commission is addressing the financial implementation performance of provinces, given the significant service delivery role they play in the sector. And again, it's those 4 points that I've mentioned out from the start, and I think we would like you to leave with those 4 points as part of a lens to look at the interaction around the total health system. It's the financing, it's the human capital management or employment of staff at different categorization of the health system, it's the maintenance of infrastructure, both buildings and those expensive equipment, and it's the issue of procurement of drugs and other forms of important resources needing to be injected in the health system. The Commission notes the good spending performance on some of the grants and proposes that the Department of Health conducts an assessment to improve delivery outcomes, particularly in relation to infrastructure delivery. The Commission stressed the need to invest in better performance information management system to improve linkages between performance targets and the budget. And we suggest that because there was a decision taken some years ago when President Thabo Mbeki was there, that only official statistics which comes from Stats South Africa are used and considered as the stats for reporting on any matter in the public service and goods such as health outcomes. So we're suggesting that the department should consider that, because that's the stat that we all use. So those are the points I would like to make to yourself, Chairperson and Honourable Members. That concludes our presentation, and I'm handing over to you, Chair. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. The presentation at times always raised some areas of interest, but I will leave over to members to ask questions. Honorable members, there is the presentation. Honorable Wilson.
Thank you, Chair. I think the report was very, very extensive, and I think it was very, very clear. And I thank you for it, because I think it's taken some of the blinkers off as far as this is concerned, and certainly in terms of some of the concerns that we are addressing in terms of health delivery, particularly basic health delivery in South Africa. I just wanted, mine's just a point of clarification, and I'm not sure who would answer it. I think perhaps the gentleman who gave us the report on the budget in terms of what goes to provinces. Now, for instance, the NHI had projects that were run in the various provinces, and doctors were employed as part and parcel of this, as part and parcel of these projects. Are you then saying that the payment of those doctors was done via the grant through the provinces? It was a provincial mandate, not an NHI, national health mandate under the NHI. I just need clarification on that. Thank you.
Honorable Mashalela.
No, thanks, Chair, for the opportunity, and thanks to the FFC for the presentation of the report. Just a few clarities. I just want to, what's the difference between performance areas or indicators and strategic objectives? I'm raising this in the context of your page 7. Page 7, slide 13, you are saying there are 12, there's a total of 12 performance areas, but when you go to page 10, slide 20, you're saying there are 11 strategic objectives. So that is the context that I want to understand. What's the difference between the two? Or they are used interchangeably, meaning one and the same thing. I'm not sure. I thought they don't mean one and the same. Performance indicators is something else. Strategic objective is another. Out of strategic objectives, you develop indicators. That's how I understood it. But just a clarity on that area. And I'm not sure whether you yourself and the AG are reading the same APP. Because the indicators, they're not the same. The AG has got its own number. We have got your own number. They're not the same numbers. So I'm not sure whether you're reading the same document or you're reading different document. AG, for example, is saying program 2 has got 14 indicators, and you said 11. Program 5, AG is talking of 19, and they're talking of 11. So I'm not sure whether you're reading different documents, and which one, or we must find ourselves when we then read the AG to determine who is right and who is wrong between the two of you. I would have thought that it should be one and the same thing. And then I, I just want just to verify whether as you prepare some of this thing or interact with these processes, do you perhaps have an opportunity to engage with the department? Or do you have the interaction with the department from time to time? I'm raising this in the context that, for example, you are raising an issue around the proliferation of entities, which in your view should not be like that, because the function should be performed by the department itself. Have you made an assessment in terms of capacity of the department? Because they might be coming with these entities because of the internal capacity that they feel. It might be difficult for them to perform. And when you see in most cases, the performance of the department year in and year out since we came here has not been pleasing one, because when you look at the achievement, they will always run around 40 to 50%. If they've done well, it's 60%. But normal, that's where they range. Although the budget will have been spent as a whole in its totality, you know, but the achievement will be standing at between 45 to 55%, which shows there's some little bit of a problem in terms of planning, in terms of capacity, and all related matters. Hence, maybe they realized that, and therefore, some functions they felt it needs to be performed by other bodies. The second issue that I'm raising is around the interaction is the observation and the concern which you raise, which is also a big concern for us, of the high usage of consultant in program two, which when you say function must be performed internally, it means they will have to get more consultant because they might not have that internal capacity to it. How do you balance the two and make sure that doesn't happen? And then I was trying to look at the infrastructure performance. You are saying it's as a result of public works capacity. I'm not sure whether that's the totality of the problem, because you must not be simplistic about the problem. I'm not sure whether that's the totality of the problem. I'm raising it in the context, but because on a quarterly basis, when the department reports expenditure on infrastructure, it doesn't reflect only public work as a problem. It reflects supply chain as the biggest problem, which is a matter that even the AG, when presented, it shows red, and it's one of the issues that the chair has raised as one of the key four areas, which is procurement, which is a big problem in the Department of Health in general. Public works might be an additional factor, but I don't think it's the factor. And also the political management process as well. And the challenges around corruption and all other related matters, because you'll find that they will go on tender But if the service provider they want doesn't meet the requirements, they are not going to appoint. And they will wait until the 90 days passes and then restart again. So it was another deal with capacity. You see? So I will say that those are some of the things that we need to look into so that we've got a holistic picture of where exactly is the problem. So that when we come with the total solution to the problem, we must have a totality of the picture of what is happening, why this thing is going on, because it's been going on for years. And in all the provinces, just there seems to be a network or system in most cases where they all more or less operate in the same way. And then will it be possible to get a breakdown per province in terms of the budget for primary health care in the context of the district health services program? I'm raising this because you said it's 44%, which is an average. And you're saying that's fairly good. But that average might be skewed there might be skewed relation. But when you add them, they might give you that average. You might find others are going at 50-something percent. But when you look at the whole picture, it tells you, no, they are doing very well, of which there might be provinces that are not doing very well. It will be good if we can just get an indication of how each province's average is standing, at what percentage are they standing. So that when you look at the 44%, we're able to say, okay, almost all of them are within that 44%, and therefore we're comfortable all of them are doing very well. The norms and standards, you'll recall we once debated this matter of the norms and standards. And when we raised with the department about the norms and standards, those norms and standards were told they are old and outdated. In your own interaction with them, are there any new norms and standards that has been developed or is still based on the old, outdated one, which is more than 15 years or so old, and there's not of development in the health sector since then? Just so that we're able to say, no, these budgets are in line with the norms and standards, and those norms and standards are relevant to the current situation. And then the audit outcomes, I'm not sure whether my memory is the one that is lapsing. I would have thought that what you are reflecting is not a true reflection. I don't know, maybe it's me who's wrong. I thought that Northwest has lapsed in the last financial year. And Eastern Cape has improved. That's how I understood it. Maybe I'm missing the point somewhere. But your figures of 16 and 17, I'm not sure how correct they are on the audit outcome of 16 and 17. I would have thought it's not what you are reflecting. I might be missing the point, but I've seen the document now, and I didn't have time to compare with the reports of the annual report that we dealt with in October.
but the researchers are here, they might quickly look into the matter and assist me whether it's a correct reflection. And then you, and that's the thing that you are raising in that. For example, you are saying KwaZulu-Natal is unqualified audit. I'm not sure whether they did had unqualified audit. Because according to you, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 unqualified audit, 6. And then when you add the National Department of Health, 7. And it's only 4 that is unqualified qualification. I'm not sure whether that is correct. If my memory still serves me well, it might have lost me. I'm not sure whether it's correct. You know? But I thought it's less than this. I thought it's less than this. I thought it's not 7. And that's where you have written unqualified without anything, as if they did receive it. Because if you have written unqualified too, it means they've got clean audit. And I don't remember any of the Department of Health in the country getting a clean audit. I'm raising in a context that because that's where you have said unqualified with findings, and that's where you have just written unqualified. And then my understanding is that all of them, those that have received unqualified, they've received unqualified with matters. Then the last thing, it's worrying that the fruitless and wasteful expenditure are increasing. Have you tried to understand why? Because just to have it and then have the information without diagnosing, why is it increasing? Is it because of lack of consequences, or people are just stealing money? It was wasteful. It means you are wasteful and fruitless, because either you steal the money or you become reckless in your duties, and then you don't pay people on time, they ended up adding interest and all those things, and that becomes wasteful. So I'm not sure whether you did make an analysis why is it increasing, so that at least we might have a better picture what's happening. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mashallah. From my side, is it possible? You said the Department of Health is still using consultants. Is it possible to say in which area, so that we are able to understand? If my memory serves me well, the Department of Health did at some point explain which it may be to you consultants, you know, the love life and whatever, all those small, what should I say, groups or entities that they are using in terms of HIV and AIDS and other things with schools. So that's why my question is it possible, is it in the administration, is it in clinical, is it in support services within the sector, so that we are able to monitor that. I think it's the same question, and pardon me if I'm repeating what Honorable Mashallah has raised. You said there are unreported cases in provinces of wasteful expenditure. If they are unreported, how are we going to know about them? Is it the witness in the, because the AG is conducting its audit. If I can have an understanding on that, because we may be concerned about an X amount of money, whereas at the end we are talking about billions, a huge amount of money. We are seated with a sector where there are people are able to manipulate the system to give a particular outcome. So yeah, I think for me those are there. I just want to check if there is anybody who can assist us in switching off this aircon. Because there are two things that are happening. It's hot and we are competing with the sound. I don't know. I think if the committee section can assist us with that. I think those are the three questions that have been asked. I'll hand over to you, Chair, to check how then who's then going to respond and how. Yeah, we're not going to be prescriptive. Who must respond on what? It will depend on you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members. And I think there are great questions and comments that has been raised. On the first question from Honourable Wilson, the answer, there's no direct answers to how. In fact, there's contradictions because of the information that we're getting, whether personnel has been funded out of, in terms of your question, out of the national, what is considered as a national health insurance fund. The reality is there's no national health insurance fund as yet. There's been an allocation made towards the establishment of it, which looks at the different structural and service delivery permutations that need to be delivered on it. And the information that we have is not clear, and I think that's a good question to ask the National Department directly. That's the first thing. And then on the number of points that, what I'm going to do, I'm going to respond to some of the comments and questions that were made, and the others I'll ask the colleagues, including the CEO, just to add to that. Because on the one hand, there's an institutional memory in terms of what is the infrastructure arrangements that the Treasury has put together around the management of budgets and relative to the performance of services, which for my son some 10 years ago, and our new CEO since last, till the end of February this year, she could answer some of those things. But I think your comment, I'm going to leave that to Eddie. Other than to say it's probably an interchangeable use of performance indicators and strategic areas. That's the nature of the presentation. But I want to ask Edith to respond to that. On the engagement of departments on the proliferation of entities, I think the point that we're making is based on the data, the data that we have, that we receive through reports, annual and otherwise, but also that we've received through the financial statements and what we've read in the national expenditure, estimated national expenditure of these years and the trends on it. And that's the comment that we're making. The nature of engagements, we only engage with the departments, any department, especially those that share its functions, when it comes to policy matters. And the reason why we're engaging on policy matters is firstly because of the requirements of the PFMA on departments, anything that has implications for subnational government, provinces and municipalities, they need to consult the FFC. Social functions, they need to consult the FFC. But also when there are big things that's going to happen, such as the National Health Insurance Fund, we need to be consulted because of the potential implications that it has for the constitutional form of the state, meaning there's a national government, there's a province, and then there's municipalities. So that's the nature of our engagements. Now, linked to that is also the nature of the financing required for a particular policy, because policy needs to be costed and priced. Legislation needs to be costed and priced to be able to see how it can be implemented and how the fiscus can actually afford certain things. And many a times the dream of where we want to be in 10 years' time in terms of the policy and systems doesn't necessarily reflect adequately on what is the fiscal resources. And that's where we start playing a role in that particular space, and that's our engagement on it. And hence we also raising that going forward, our engagements will be in many ways than one on the National Health Insurance Scheme, because if you have a single system of financing, it's got it will have a rippling effect on the intergovernmental system. Same as what the Social Security grants made when the function was shifted from the provinces to national, and that was a rewiring of that particular system, the financing in particular. You're right, there is a relationship between what gets claimed as a DPW, or rather Department of Public Works problem, and what the agent wants in terms of its own supply chain management systems. Have we looked at that relationship? No, because that's not our primary focus. Our focus was more to look at what does the APP mean relative to the budget, relative to the division of revenue, and also our own recommendations. And yes, the issue of capacity is a matter. Now there is a problem that when we, as a South Africans, sorry, when we talk about capacity, we always think it's people. People aren't the panacea of capacity. Capacity has got to do with systems, it's got to do with processes, it's got to do with legislation, it's got to do with financing, it's got to do with the structural arrangement of an institution. And the thing that we always sometimes miss is got to do with what is the relationship management within the department, in terms of who's accountable, who's responsible, who makes certain decisions at certain moments, and so on and so forth. And then the other thing that we sometimes also forget is of time. So those are the number of capacity considerations that one needs to look at in terms of this. And sometimes plans are over ambitious. Sometimes the and it's just because of the pressures of budgets. You know, if you don't spend by a certain time, and it looks like this money is going to be not spent, there's the treasurer looks at the budget and says, we need money for other things. And then sometimes money gets crimped off to put into other priority areas. So the point is, we would agree with you in terms of the relationship between the public Department of Public Works and the supply chain issue. If it was about the FFC, I would even tell you our problem for the last 4 years. And it's definitely not a matter of supply chain. But it's not about us. Then the point that you raise, the network. Now, part of the job is, our job is that we're not investigating fruitless, wasteful fraud and corruption. We use the Auditor General's report. And you will know that the Auditor General also stopped at a certain point. Because it's one thing to say people are, and we've experienced in our institution, it's one thing to say there's fraud and corruption, but you can't prove it if you don't have a forensic investigation. So, because forensic investigations go 3,000 feet deeper, or 300 feet deeper, depending on how you see it. So on the one hand, the thing can be as clear as daylight, but that doesn't mean anything. A forensic investigation needs to be done to be able to look at how the different systems talk to each other, whether decisions has been rolled back, whether legislation and policy has not been done, who's sitting in the core of it in terms of decision making, what's the finance flow, where did money flow, and so on and so forth, to be able to make statements that is beyond what the Auditor General is telling all of us. that's not our space, and we just interpret what's been said, and we're highlighting that for you as a matter that needs to be considered. So you will not get beyond that point with us, even if it's going to frustrate the honourable members and chair on it. We're not going to be able to give you a statement on it. It's not in our forte. If you get that particular responsibility by changing the law and the constitution, then you can ask for the same. But for now, that's not our space, honourable member. The issue of norms and standards, and then the issue of productive health spending, do the department have? Don't the department have? I think it's whether it's in process, we can't answer that question. I think it's just fair to say that if it hasn't come to you, it hasn't been in the public domain, then even if you've engaged with some of these issues that links to norms and standards, we can't say whether there's norms and standards in place or new ones. I'm suggesting that question should rather be asked directly to the department. Because we also do relationship management. There's stuff that we're getting, starting to get in health and in other departments, in our own interactions, which we can only wait till a minister speaks on the matter. Because if we're going to speak on the matter, then it's going to be a situation now that, look there, the FFC is getting into our policy space. Or who gives the right to the FFC to make this policy space? What we do to our own submissions is that we start saying, how do we use fiscal policy, spending plans, revenue management, and the plans of departments to change the way of doing things, to change how the systems operate, how the management operate, but also how we use finances to ensure that we create better and improve access to health services by our people, and in particular the historic disadvantage, because that's part of the social contract that any society, any government have with its citizens, to ensure that health services are available for better health outcomes. On your point on the outcome audit, our data is correct, because our data is based on what the Auditor General has done its own summary report on 2016-17. And if you look at that sheet, Honourable Member, 29, you'll see that the slide shows you the trends over time. Now, that's what you get from the provincial outcomes from the Auditor General. I asked the Auditor General last week, Friday, because we're sitting in the same meeting, whether we've got the latest reports for 2017-18, and they're still working on it. So what you have here is there's been slight substantial changes. If you look at 2013, where we were in 2012-13, to relatively where we are in 2016-17, the picture has improved. Notwithstanding, there are still many qualified but findings. There's two qualified and then there's two unqualified. And those two unqualified is the National Department of Health and the Western Cape. The others are still, there's still questions around it. So the truth is, it depends how you read unqualified with findings relative to just qualified on it. And that has changed, and it has shifted in many ways. The Fritters and Waste Pool I spoke to. So I'm going to ask the colleagues to talk to the first question, the difference between performance areas, indicators, and strategic objectives, the issue about consultants, and there's a clear question about the professional categorization of those consultants, and then there's the matter on the primary health care budget, and its proportionality relative to the full budget of health. And then the chairperson's question on the consultants issue. Eddie and Khan, sorry, chairperson, with your permission, can I ask before I get into trouble?
I was fine. Okay.
Thanks, Chairperson. Well, the first question on contracting of the doctors for NHI, we've had some teething problem with in contracting between the district health offices and contracting because of the capacity problem that the honourable member Masalela spoke about. So, because we don't have the NHI fund established, so the contracting that is currently that we're currently doing is not in. It's not happening in line with how the NHI fund would have envisaged. So the contracting that happens is between the national department and the provinces contracting on behalf of the pilot site, where the contractors actually bill the departments, and the payments come from the national health insurance, the national health insurance grant. So until such time, the actual NHI fund is established. So we're still going to have provinces and the national department contracting on behalf of the district health offices. The issue of the performance and strategic goal, I think our policy share the report that we used for this particular is the one which has been tabled in this house. So it should be the same as the one which the Auditor General is using. So we've been looking at the strategic goal. So mainly we're not necessarily looking at the performance indicators per se. So we're not looking at the number of houses. The specific performance indicators. We're looking at the strategic goal. So where we say 11 performance performance areas. So essentially referring to the strategic goals as listed in the annual performance plan. So I think we have been using performance areas and strategic goal interchangeably, but if that created a confusion, we'd really like to apologize for that. The issue of consultants, so the consultant issue that we're raising, again, it's in the context of capacity, because the consulting budgets, high consulting budgets that we see, they are in program two, which is responsible for implementing national health insurance. And when you see where exactly this consultancy work is, will be, where this consultancy budget will be going, it's for the development of this e-health platforms for your health information management system, your NHI data, your NHI beneficiary data registry. So these are the areas where and it is expected of the department that at the beginning, in the initial phase of the NHI, it will be expected that certain level of consultancy will be required as they develop these platforms, these solutions. But what we are saying is, going forward, there is a need to build this internal capacity within the department to ensure that when those e-platforms goes down, there are people within the department who are able to maintain those solutions. Yeah. So it's not necessarily consulting for all the programs. It's just only in program two. And as I say, there's an expectation that initially, because we need to build this health management information system, we are going to need IT experts to build these platforms. But once they're fully developed, where the department needs to take it over, or the National Health Fund will have to take it over and run the processes, so that we are avoiding a continuous reliance on consultants.
It would be great if going forward on some of the points raised, if we could like have at least a week conversation with the chairperson on some of the matters that might be outstanding, and then we will come back and next time around give more detail to it, because there is a trend in the question that's been asked. So we'll pick up on that and see what other additional information we can bring to the fore.
Yes, Mr.
Thank you, Chair. Chairman, I just have one question. I think Mr. Edizo Khabe, one thing that he mentioned in terms of Program 5, he was suggesting that the department must cut the numbers of doctors that have been trained outside the country. Because if you check, like he said, that the economy of the country is not doing so well. I just want to find out from him, is he having any idea in terms of different provinces, how much are they spending for doctors who are training outside the country? Because in the Free State, between 2015 and 16, we spent about 50 million only for Cuba. That's what we spent. China is 35 million. So what about other provinces? Did you check that?
Thanks, we don't have the actual numbers, but what we know for sure is that currently there are about 5,000 doctors in who are being trained in Cuba. So we don't have a breakdown of the provinces, but that's the information that we can find out and send it back to the committee in writing.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. I think initially I did say that these processes, these presentations are assisting us in a number of ways when we are to conduct an oversight, when we are to receive some presentations from the department and its entities, we are then able to measure and against what you have then given us, so that we, all of us, that we're doing that for one reason and one reason only, to ensure that the sector, with the challenges that are there, but I think the Chair has said something very profound, that this sector depends on warm bodies. That's with all the challenges that we're having financially, among others, the greater percentage of what makes the sector make or break depends on warm bodies. I always have this thing that no child can be given an injection by a robot. There will never be an operation that's I may be naive or I'm living in my own world. Yes, in terms of cleaning they can be, but there are issues that really need warm bodies. How then does the sector, with those challenges of financing in the country, navigate? But the other thing that is quite, which may be a challenge to us or to the country and to Parliament through this committee, is the support that the National Department is to give to provinces. Is that support welcome? Is that support appreciated? Maybe the department is to explain to us, and the case in point here, which we are to draw lessons from, is the issue of life esteemy, which is a matter that I think that instead of forever referring to it in a negative form, but is to just say what lessons are we to draw. I'm raising that precisely because in your presentation you did allude to that. And yeah, thank you very much. I think if you want to stay, it's fine. If you want to leave, it's still okay. For any outstanding responses, we will write, and we'll expect you to respond on those in writing. Thank you very much. I'm told that lunch will be ready at 1 o'clock. You are invited to join us. Thank you.
Not this. We are pumping. We are. Huh? What?
Are you saying Salima Puke? Don't want somebody to speak.
I don't want him.
Okay, can I leave my charger with you? I'm going to leave my charger here, right?
So you don't have to do it.